It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Ryan, it's a somber occasion on the Hockey News Podcast presented by BetMGM and McKinney Hockey. We're laying to rest a contender, or a thought, a would-be contender that was much ballyhooed in the offseason. The Calgary Flames, like we said, were officially laid to rest. Their playoff hopes put out to pasture, shot in the face like Old Yeller behind the barn. They're no longer in playoff contention. They're done.
Yeah, did they shoot Old Yeller in the face?
That's just how I thought.
You just sort it of was.
That just makes it even worse, I think, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about the Flames quite a bit on the podcast and the struggles they've had, particularly in net. Is Daryl Sutter the long-term answer behind the bench? He is a Stanley Cup winning coach.
We won the Jack Adams last year.
Which is always the kiss of death when you win the Jack Adams. So I think the big question now in what is going to become the Flames offseason is, does he remain the head coach? Mm-hmm. I will say... there is a pretty good option in the organization.
Oh.
The head coach of the AHL Calgary mm-hmm. Wranglers is Mitch Love. This is somebody with a lot of experience, but still, on the young side. He's worked internationally with Team Canada at various levels. And the Calgary Wranglers have a fantastic record this year and last. 95 wins during Mitch Love's tenure. They were the Stockton Heat the year before, but same team.
He wouldn't even have to change arenas, I'm pretty sure.
Wouldn't even have to. Exactly. Tremendously successful. Mm. They went to round three last year in the playoffs. Obviously, playoffs have not happened yet in the AHL, but Calgary, very strong team there. So I'd be interested to see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, look, they've graduated, a good amount of players from that system this year, and maybe Mitch Love would have the courage to call up Dustin Wolf when he needs it,
right?
Especially because we talked about goaltending with him so much, and Jacob Markstrom did the if you're a goaltender, tend the goal type of mistake last night in a game that ended up being solved in a sudden death shootout. It's tough. The one thing is even after all this, I was looking at this and I'm like, this is Daryl Sutter, and I think that. He was going to stay. I honestly thought there was a chance that he was going to stay. Murray Edwards loves him, who's the owner. And then I saw Nick Ritchie in the shootout.
Right.
And that's when I thought, there is no way that you're a competitive owner. You're an owner that is funneling money into this team, and you want to win. And then you look at your coach put Nick Ritchie in a do-or-die shootout when you have, like, Tyler Toffoli, like Andrew Mangiapane, Elias Lindholm, all these guys, and I think that might have been the kiss of death. That would be mine.
Right, that would be the final spot.
As critical as I've been of Daryl Sutter, I still was like, maybe he can, maybe this is just a tough year, lots of new faces, it's difficult. No, that's the kiss of death right there.
Right.
but speaking of teams that are still in the playoff hunt, the New York Islanders. Mm-hmm. Now, they made news over the weekend because Bo Horvat in what we just need more of is asked, and it's asked by the, it's one of those interviews on TV that's broadcasted throughout the PA system in the arena. It's by the official team. He talks about how great it is to be in a playoff hunt, much better than his time in Vancouver.
Right.
So that was a bunch of shade, if you will. And the thing is, it wasn't shade at Canucks fans. It was shade at the Canucks as an organization.
Mm-hmm.
Because then the next day he had to apologize. He got a lot of flack from it for Canucks fans.
Right.
Next day he apologized. My argument is that that's bullpucky, if you will. That is just he should not have had to apologize, because when you really think about it, this is one of the only playoff chases he's ever been in. He's got nothing to compare it to. What do you think, Ryan?
I agree with you. I mean, the Canucks were in the playoff bubble, so he was there.
Yeah, in the 20.
Yeah.
So, but that.
Oh, but you're talking about this year.
I'm talking about any year that he's been there. Like they were in. They made the playoffs once in like 2015. I'm pretty sure against Calgary.
Yeah.
And then they were in the COVID bubble that basically wasn't even the playoffs. Like.
Right.
There was no atmosphere there, whatever. And then they've been.
Yeah.
And then everything in between those two things basically has been complete failure.
Yeah. Regardless, I agree with you. Mm-hmm. I don't think he should have apologized.
No.
I think it was, it's fun. I even know, some in the Vancouver media thought it was great.
Yeah, they were like, what are we supposed to say?
Like, hey, like, speak your mind. Yeah. It's like, rivalries are great. He used to be, your captain. Mm-hmm. Now he's in New York. And, there's such a push and pull where, in hockey in particular, it's hard to get players to really say something controversial. Mm-hmm. And I see their side of it too, because when somebody actually does, then you get some people in the media that jump all over them. Mm-hmm. And that makes them very guarded because they don't want to put that out there. It's very much a team-driven culture. Players, I think we're seeing a change now where younger players are especially willing to show their personalities more than some of the old guard. But there is still that reticence, and so I understand why Horvat apologized, because to him it's like, I don't want to.
So you know what? I have like five more reporters at my stall this morning. Like, just leave me alone.
I don't want to be rocking the boat or anything like that. But I mean, personally, I think it was great, and he's gonna get booed when he goes back to Vancouver anyway.
You think so?
Well, sure.
I don't think before this. They loved
him.
Well,
maybe not.
They were really
this.
Upset. And he said he thought he was going to be a Canuck for life at the All-Star game. I suppose that's true.
But now,
he'll be different.
He'll probably be booed, but it's like, that's okay.
But if you can't look, like, it just reminded me of, and he never said anything, inflammatory to spark this, like, Bo Horvat. But it just kind of reminded me when, like, for some reason, half of the, at the time, Air Canada Center would boo Phil Kessel when he came back. Because it's like, He did nothing but produce.
Right.
The teams around him were terrible. Yeah. And they were barely ever even in the hunt. Mm-hmm. And this is exactly what it's like with Bo Horvat, where like he's asked, what is it like to, what's the atmosphere like here for a playoff hunt? He goes, better in Vancouver, because they were never in a playoff hunt.
Right.
Like every time when we got around to this time of the year, like, late March, early April, it was always, all right, well, let's hope they can keep losing. Like the fans were cheering for them to lose.
Yeah.
That's not a great habit. So what he said, first of all, it was the, am I wrong? Like, prove me wrong.
Totally.
And you know what? Like, the thing is with the young players, I think they're a lot more willing to let their personality shine in promotional way. But this is like sort of like, this is lobbing bombs, This is like pro wrestling.
Sure.
This is, I think we need more of it. Like,
I agree.
I would say go off King. If you will.
Jack Eichel did it earlier this year, too.
As he should.
When he went back to Buffalo.
They were, like, the Sabres are great now. They're arguably, like, next year, they are so much fun. I'm going to make it a point to, like, go and watch a game there. It's awesome. But during Jack Eichel's time, they were terrible. And they were never even in the hunt.
No.
Like, it's, so you can't blame these players for being like, I effectively wasted. Like, I grew a lot as a person, especially with Bo Horvat. Mm. But like, when it comes to you play to win the game. It's the Jim Mora quote.
That's right.
That's Herb Edwards. Jim Mora's playoffs, which both make sense here, because you play to win the game. And both Bo Horvat and Jack Eichel did very little in their respective, home teams or draft teams. Mm. You can't blame them for being upset now they're in a better spot and going like, yeah, this is so much better. Anyway, the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yes.
They are, like, there are a lot of playoff races really coming down to the wire here. The Penguins are involved in this. This last wild card in the East is just, it's like Thunderdome right now. Like,
totally.
it's great. And the Penguins against all odds, because it seems like all they do is inflict their own sort of wounds. But they are clinging to that spot. They are almost in.
Yep.
They've made the playoffs 16 years in a row. I'm almost certain both your kids are younger than that.
Correct.
Which is absolutely nuts. The last time they missed the playoffs, I was 11, I believe.
It was Sidney Crosby's first season. He has made the playoffs every year since.
Which is nuts. Like, and that first season, they were really bad, and that's what got them getting Malkin. But it's quite the run. If they miss Mm-hmm. Which means first time in 16 years, you know, almost two decades, they haven't made the playoffs.
Yeah.
How do we remember this? What is the legacy of this Pittsburgh Penguins, I guess, sort of core?
Yeah, so the first thing I'll point out is all they have to do is beat the worst two teams in the NHL. They have Chicago and Columbus on the schedule.
That's
two
a
teams
death
with
knell.
Nothing to play for.
Death knell.
So they should make the playoffs. Having said that, you know, watching the game against Detroit on the weekend, you saw Sidney Crosby once again elevate. And Evgeny Malkin as well.
Yep.
Crucial time, he was there. So, I think you look at those guys and Letang that have been there in the long run. I'll focus on Crosby because, I've said this before, and this kind of reinforced it. I think he's top five all time at this point.
Oh, yeah.
Gretzky, Lemieux, or Howe, and then, Crosby. And, you can make arguments about, if you're a Jean Beliveau fan, if you're a Nick Lidstrom fan. There's obviously scores of Hall of Famers that you could put in that category, but... you look at what Crosby has been able to do consistently, that high level, that point per game rate that he's had so many seasons at this point. That backhand that just cannot be stopped. We know McDavid's going to win the Hart this year.
It should be.
Having said that, when I'm thinking about who else is on the ballot, Crosby's got to be there at this point, assuming they make the playoffs, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, that's the legacy, is like Crosby and then Malkin, the excellence that he has consistently brought, Chris Letang, and everything he's gone through and still played at a high level.
Man.
Pretty incredible. Also, we think back to the Red Wings and the run they had in terms of years in the playoffs, and Nick Lidstrom never missed the playoffs, which is
wild.
But it got to the point where it was almost like a millstone around their neck, where it's like, we just got to get in.
That last playoff performance, where they got, I believe they got swept by the Predators. I believe it was. But that last one, you could tell that was just getting in was their cup.
Exactly. Yeah. And so you do have to, and I mean, these guys are ultra competitive, obviously. So they always want to make it. And, at this point, if you just miss, then it's not like you're getting a great draft pick anyways. But it's going to come to the point where you say, okay, what's better for the long term of the franchise? And again, maybe they only care about the short term because you have two surefire Hall of Famers in Crosby and Malkin, and you just want to keep pushing as much as you can while they're in the lineup. I understand that logic. But that's the sort of intrigue for me is, at what point do they cut it off and say, we're not going to buy at the deadline, we're going to sell?
Well, what I think they did this year is they waffled way too much at the deadline. Mm. I think what their downfall was, and here they are, on the verge of making the playoffs, so I don't want to say downfall, but you look at this roster, this should be a better team than it is. Just straight up, I think, that you have two generational talents, the secondary scoring and Zucker and Gensel and Raquel and all this. It should be a better team. But I think what was their downfall is that they were reportedly extremely hesitant to trade their first.
Uh-huh.
And reports from notable, I believe it was Elliot Friedman who reported this, that they had a deal on the table for two firsts for JT Miller.
Right.
So that would have been, look, we can say everything we want about JT Miller and his early season and his defensive sort of woes, really,
because,
and they are glaring.
Right.
But he's a point per game player now. He has sort of reverted back to that, to a player, and I think any point per game player, it's probably worth around $8 million when you really think about it. So
sure.
At the end of the I can't believe I'm advocating for the JT Miller contract, but
yeah.
I mean, look, it's for a point per game guy, but instead they didn't sell. They were outside the playoffs. They didn't sell. What they did is they got this weird middle ground of I guess we'll trade a second and a couple guys for Michael Granlin.
Yeah.
And that has been a disaster for them.
Yeah.
Apparently, everyone in Pitts, I'm very tied into the Pittsburgh mindset because Jesse Marshall's occasionally on the Staff Grab podcast and through that I fall, and they're just this guy does nothing. This guy just out there for cardio, basically,
right,
as they say. So I think it was their indecision of being we're not going to take a big swing, but we're also not going to sell.
Yeah.
That was their downfall. But I look back at this and I go, I don't think, when's the next time that 16 straight years in the playoffs are going to happen. You know, like,
yeah,
it is with how sort of like quick organizational cycles have become, because we haven't, like, when's the last time there was like a, like the Tampa Bay Lightning, I think, are at that point where it's like a 10-year dynasty or whatever, or a dynasty, like a 10-year of like, we're making the playoffs every single year. We're a very high end team, but even they missed the playoffs in 2016-17. You know, so like, when's the next time? This is a remarkable feat, and I think if it goes by the wayside this week, 0% of the blame, and I mean like not even one bot on Twitter, should point the finger at Crosby, Malkin, Letang.
Sure,
not a single one. It should be pointed at Ron Hextall.
Yeah,
for the inability, and I guess Brian Burke as well, for the inability to build a team around arguably three generational talents. Speaking of teams that are on the bubble, the Florida Panthers dealt a massive blow last night. Not for lack of trying, though, because they did throw, I believe it was 46 shots on Ilya Samsonov. But they did lose in overtime to the Toronto Maple Leafs. But the Panthers, they are, against all odds, like we said, they are still in the thick of it. Yeah. They are still, you know, every time they've been sort of put, there's been a position where, like, you have to win this game. In front of them, they've managed to do it. And they're doing it on the back of career journeyman, guy who basically entered a sort of like the stretch run with, I believe it was an 881 save percentage. It might even be 861, but I'm pretty sure it was an 881 save percentage. And Alex Lyon, who is putting together some incredible hockey.
Indeed.
Ryan, do we believe in the Florida Panthers?
You know, it's like, I want to believe. They're calling him the Lion King, which
because
is fantastic.
Because of Alex Lyon.
Exactly. And if I'm not mistaken, I remember when he was an undrafted free agent. There was interest, and obviously, eventually he got to the NHL. But, you know, this was not a highly touted goaltender, you know, back in the day. So good on Alex Lyon for, like, really, you know, grinding through. He does have the advantage, and we've talked about this before, of, you know, teams probably don't have as much of a book on him as they, you know, Devon Levi. We've seen it in Buffalo. He's been on a great run as well.
Four out of five.
Just learning about him. Florida, I think they have the hardest schedule remaining.
Yes.
They have to play Carolina, and Carolina does have something to play for.
Yes.
Because the New Jersey Devils are still in that hunt for first place in the division. So they're not going to get an easy game from the Hurricanes. And Alex Lyon did play for the Hurricanes, so there's probably
very
people
briefly,
in that organization briefly, but you know, they would have a book on him. So, I mean, the momentum is there, even though they lost to the Leafs.
They still got a point out of that, though.
They still got a point, but they're not in the best shape.
No.
So it's tough, but it's a great story at the least for Alex Lyon to. It's basically Alex Lyon and Matthew Tkachuk that have kept them alive these past few weeks, and it's intriguing to say the least.
Absolutely, and I think that, you know, the thing about the Lion King though is that eventually Mufasa does fall off the cliff. He does die and get trampled to death by a bunch of wildebeests.
I think he's Simba though.
The Lion King is Simba, but he was the original Lion King when he started out. I think they'll maybe slip in to the playoffs. I don't have any faith in them beyond that. But I do.
Right.
But I just think the roster is too thin, too depleted. But what I do have to give them credit for is, you know, Keith Tkachuk comes out and blasts them. Their coach comes out and blasts them, and they responded. Good for them.
There
good
you
for
go.
Them. Finally, Luke Hughes. He's in the NHL now. Just real quick before we stop, do you think he can make? How quick do you think he can be before? Or how quick do you think he can make an impact?
I think that we're looking at next year for sure. I mean, he's going to get a little bit of time, but when you look at the Devils, they have such a good defense core, and most of them are coming back next year. But the key to me is what happens with Damon Severson, because he's an unrestricted free agent. Decisions will have to be made.
He'll go.
And, you know, you have, and keep in mind, you have Luke Hughes, you have also have Simo Nemec, who has had a very good year in the AHL with Utica. I think he's got 29 points this year. He's their second highest scoring blue liner, and doing so as a teenager straight from the draft.
Second overall pick, man.
Second
overall higher
pick.
Than Luke Hughes was.
It's true.
Yeah.
So that's going to be interesting. I think it's a good situation because Luke Hughes is not going to be gifted a roster spot, he'll have to earn it. Having said that, he has such a great skill set that it'll be very fun to see what he can do. You know, at the beginning of next year. I think, you know, he'll get some chances. And you never know. There might be injuries and they got to plunk him in. But for now, it's just, it's cool to see him and Jack in the same jersey. But this will be a marathon, not a sprint. And it's going to be very cool to see what Luke Hughes can do after I saw him at the Frozen Four with Michigan last weekend.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we are going to now talk to Luke Robitaille of the Los Angeles Kings. Mm-hmm. We'll be right back. So we'd like to welcome to the show the president of the Los Angeles Kings and obviously, you know, Hockey Hall of Famer. The resume is very well known. It's Luke Robitaille. Luke, thank you so much for joining us. This is very exciting, especially in the middle of as you gear up for the playoffs.
Yeah. Good to see you guys. Good to see you guys. Yeah.
Indeed. So to begin with, you know, obviously the Kings having a fantastic season and a big driver for that. Anje Kopitar, you know, he's been such a leader, you know, both on and off the ice for the Kings for so long now. But what has impressed you the most about Kopitar and what he's meant to this team this season?
Well, for us, it's kind of weird. He seems like he doesn't age. You know, he's the same every year. It's incredible. You know, he's always our number one center. He's a 200-foot center. He's, you know, him and Patrice Bergeron, it seems like their career is so like a line. You know, it's incredible how they produce big points. They take all the big draws. They're number one guys on your PK. They're on your number one power play. And in a quiet way, they pick up their whatever, you know, 75 to 85 points every year. And whenever there's, you know, there's a minute and a half left in the game, they're on the ice. I mean, so he's been that for us. He's, if it weren't for him, we probably wouldn't be there this year. I mean, he, you know, we put a kid like Quinton Byfield with him and suddenly his career changed. You know, you're seeing his growth. Adrian Kempe got put with him 2 years ago and suddenly becomes a 35 goal scorer. You know, before that, I think his best year was 15 or 16 goals. It's amazing how, you know, I always think if he was playing back east, it'd probably be a big difference that we'd be seeing. But I do know he gets a ton of respect from the players.
And that actually leads into something else that I want to ask you about is, you know, a couple of years ago, the Kings, you didn't do a rebuild. You kind of did a retool where you did have some high draft picks, Quinton Byfield, obviously, being one of those. So you stocked up on prospects, but you didn't go through that typical period of being bad for a long time. The team rebounded fairly quickly and obviously, you know, playoffs last year, and you're definitely in the playoffs this year. Maybe you can just take us through that process of what really was what's looking like a successful retool as opposed to rebuild. How did you manage to pull that off?
Well, we certainly felt it was a full rebuild for us. It seemed like it was really long. But I think you got to commend Rob Blake. When he took over in 2017 and he looked at our team and the direction we were going, even though we were still competing, it wasn't perfect. But he, from that day on, he made a commitment to not trade away any draft picks, to start stockpiling draft picks. And this started in 2017-18, and there was nothing said, and we made the playoffs that year, but we kept all of our picks. The next year we kind of went sideways, and that's when we started moving really good players and get more prospect and picks. And I think he was very strategic. Like we would get some picks, but we would get prospect from other teams, where he made sure like his team internally worked really hard. Like, you know, I can remember we got Carl Grundstrom. That was a prospect. We got Sean Durzi. Those weren't picks. Like, those were Toronto picks that we ended up getting. They're playing on our roster. We got Trevor Moore on a Jack Campbell trade. Those are players that are very impactful on our team. So I think that's probably where he was very strategic on trying to get the right type of prospect that could help our organization, at the same time acquiring as many picks as possible. So it took a good 3 years, you know, like to turn it around. But we were lucky, or bad lucky, that it happened in the middle of COVID. So it's a little bit different too, you know. It's almost like our timing couldn't have been perfect, but it's kind of fun to see now how the page is turning, and we still know we got a lot of work to do, but it's kind of fun to see the direction of the organization.
You bring up Trevor Moore, and he's a guy who, you know, I cut my teeth covering the Toronto Marlies during his reign, and he was someone on a team full of, you know, at the time they were considered stars, you know, guys who were pretty high level. He was someone who really stood out, you know, and it broke my heart to see him move out of the market that I was covering. But, you know, he's someone who was a huge fan favorite here, and then goes to LA, goes back to his home and continues to produce, and then earns this, you know, this great contract extension, clearly showing, I guess, your commitment that, you know, he's part of the future here. What have you seen from him to really establish that?
Well, he just plays hard every game, every shift. You know, he's playing on our second line with Deneau and Arvidsson right now, and he's an impactful player, whether he scores or not. Like, you love to have players on your team that they make an impact every shift. And obviously, you need scoring, you need to get points. But when you get guys that play hard on the forecheck and come back hard and, you know, bring their speed to the game and their character, I mean, that's the way he plays all the time. And he makes really smart plays, and you always feel safe when he's got the puck. And if you want to win in the playoffs, we all know how much value those guys have on your organization. That's why we signed him. I mean, obviously his production was there. He's done a lot of things, but it has a lot to do with the safety and the work ethic that he brings inside the organization.
Another player that you made a big commitment to recently was Mikey Anderson. And this is somebody that's had a big contribution to the blue line. Same sort of question. What did you see in Mikey Anderson that made you feel like, you know, we want him on the Kings for a long time?
Yeah, he's just a good player. I mean, he's one of those guys that plays hard. He's the same, like, you know, different than like a Trevor Moore, but he's one of those players you never worry about. So when we had a chance to sign him, and he's going to be on our blue line for the next 8 years, it kind of was a no-brainer. You know, he's just like, it's funny, we missed him now, and then last night was his first game, so it's very fresh in my mind, but you can clearly tell when he's on our roster what he brings, because it's the same every night. Like, he's playing with Drew, and that pairing suddenly elevates, and it makes our team, you know, the next pairing even better. And he's just closing. He's able to play against the best player every night. And he's just a really smart player.
Someone who the production is definitely, you know, that's the thing that jumps off the page is Kevin Fiala. You know, and it was a blockbuster trade you guys made. It seemed to be, at least like the perception in the media, is that you guys seemed like you were a piece away and you got that piece. And, you know, we see blockbuster trades not work out all the time. This is one that seems to have just, everyone got everything they could have hoped for here. Is that the sense that you guys have with Kevin Fiala, that he's just been such a, has he been as good of a fit as maybe we see him to be?
Yeah, he's been as good as what you've seen. I mean, the greatest thing with Kevin is he rides a line. So he could play a bunch of games with Deneau, or he's played a few shifts with Kopitar. But the beauty of him is when we put him with Lizotte on our third line, suddenly as a team, we're so much better. And he brings in that fear every time he gets on the ice. And obviously the power play, he changed our entire power play. I mean, he's got puck movement. He moves with the puck, and he's been as good as advertised. And for us, he's been a game changer the whole year. He's what we were looking for. You're right. This is one of those trade that, you know, they, on the other side, they got a great pick, and they got Faber, who's a really good player. He's going to be really good for them. And for us, we got the guy that we wanted, that we needed at the time, that was going to help us.
Perfect. And I'm going to finish off here with a hardball question for you, Luke. You've been with the Kings organization for so long. What is your favorite Kings jersey of all time? Because,
oh boy,
LA has had some awesome sweaters. What's your personal fave?
My personal favorite, I could tell you a quick story about that. So when I came to the Kings and we were purple and gold, the only thing I didn't like is it was the same as the Lakers, and the Lakers were so popular. I'm always competing, and I want us to be on our own. So my last year junior, and I played in Hall, which is Gatineau now, Gretzky owned our team, and Gretzky changed 1985. People were like, don't know that. And then when I came in LA, I never knew we were going to get Gretzky. But the year before, our owner, Bruce McNell, showed me a new color, which was going to be very dark, dark blue, because that was his company's color. And it was a lot of silver and white. So he showed it to me. This was like 1986, like probably January 1988. And I said, those are really nice. But I said to him, I said, Gretzky used on our team, and he changed the colors a little bit more like the Raiders, and it was really cool. We loved it. So what he did is he took that jersey, what was dark blue, and he changed it into black. Now, that February, he told me he thought he had a chance to get Gretzky. Now, that February, and he Gretzky got traded in August, and I'm like, you know, never happened. You're like, yeah, sure, Gretzky's gonna get traded. But then, you know, he did change the color, and that son of a gun got Gretzky. And if you go back and look at those jerseys that we wore, they were the same jersey as the Hall Olympics wore, the same color in 1985, 86, 86, 87. And Gretz owned that team. It's kind of funny. I'm surprised that people don't talk about that more. You know, he changed
the first color. I've heard of it. Yeah. we were this close
To answer your question, I love those jerseys. It was
silver and black.
So we were this close to a universe where the Kings were their main color was blue.
Yeah, like dark blue, like a very dark blue. Yeah,
nice. Crazy to think.
All right, well, that's my favorite as well. The silver and black, I love it.
They're terrific.
So, I'm with you.
Yeah, that's all. Just an absolutely, and I'm glad that we brought them back a little bit in the reverse retros and the silver helmets. I'm a big fan.
Yeah, like it's funny, those silver helmets. Sometimes some older people will text me, go, I don't know about those helmets. I always tell them, you're not the demographic.
Absolutely. Well, we want to thank you so much for giving us your time. You know, you guys, like we said, are you're gearing up for the playoffs. You're a busy man. So thank you for giving us a couple minutes of your time. It was and we learned something new.
Thank you. Yeah, exactly. A scoop.
Right. That's a big exclusive.
Great seeing you guys. Have a good day.
Thank you too. Bye-bye. And we're back. Thank you to Luke Robitaille for joining us. That was a lot of fun. We learned some new things, you know, and that's the spice of life, learning new things every day. Now let's hop into Ryan Fire. Rapid Fire. Or we can call it Ryan Fire because Ryan's got it.
That's right.
Let's do it. Ryan, hit me. I'm ready.
Indeed. All right. So I'm going to start off from our previous segment. What's your favorite Kings jersey of all time? I'm going to stick with the silver and black, the Chevrolet jersey, as they call it, the Gretzky one. But so many fantastic options. Because I also really do love the original purple and gold.
Yeah, I think it's the original purple and gold for me. I really, there is a camp love of the Burger King jersey.
Oh, I could never get down with the Burger King.
I
get it.
There's a camp love to it. Sure. Like I would, like if I were to go, it's like an ugly Christmas sweater.
Right.
Where like I'll look at an ugly Christmas sweater and go like, yo, that's fire. Like, you know, when really it's ugly, everyone knows it's ugly, but that's the point. I really like that. But yeah, when they bring back the purple and gold for reverse retro or whatever, and that is just like, that's my, I you know what? And I'm actually kind of partial to, Not like hyper sort of like I would say like highlighter yellow, but they did have for like one or two games they had a jersey or an alternate where it was like the primary color on the jersey was that yellow or the gold, I guess.
Yeah,
I love that. I think that more than the purple as the as like the forefront. I loved when they, because you can see that from like 3 miles away. I love it. It was great.
Nice. All right, next question. Mm-hmm. What was the last new, like, I'm gonna say like food or flavor that you had that was really good? Obviously, I have one in mind, and that's what made me think of this.
Last food or flavor?
Like new thing that you tried that you were like, ooh, that really works.
Oh my goodness, this is that's a really good question. Man, it's definitely something. It's definitely something I would say like Asian inspired, because my palate has just kind of evolved lately into including, like, as a kid, I was a very picky eater. I was like,
right.
you know, like chicken tenders, mashed potatoes, and that was my thing.
Right.
Whereas now it's definitely evolved. I would say adding ginger, like, to stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I mean, like, in little bits, because I tried to make...
You don't want too much ginger.
Exactly. And I tried to make homemade General Tso chicken the other day.
Like,
I
had... That's ambitious.
It was. I had noodles and everything, and I, like, marinated the chicken overnight. I was really putting in effort here. Mm. But the thing is, I misjudged how much ginger went into it, and it just completely over, and I couldn't finish it. Like, I had to throw it out. And I hate wasting food like that.
Right.
But I had this big, like, and I have a wok. Yeah. I had this big wok of awesome, like, it looked awesome at least.
Yeah.
Like, you know, just General Tso chicken with these noodles and everything. I took one, and I'm like, it's like I'm biting into, like, a raw thing of ginger. This is bad. And so I messed it all up. But I will say, like, you add, like, little, you basically microdose it.
Right.
Like, you add, like, I don't even know what that means, but, like,
yeah.
you put a little bit in, like, just so you can have that tang as, like, an aftertaste.
Yes.
It adds a lot to a variety of dishes, variety of Asian dishes, which are amazing.
There you go. I like to just, like, snap off a little bit of ginger and buy it at the grocery store because they ring it through and it costs like 6 cents.
Oh, yeah.
I just think that's hilarious. It
is. So it's the little things in life, you know?
It really is. It really is. For me, I was in Tampa for the Frozen Four. Mm-hmm. I went to Sparkman Wharf, which is like a sort of like shipping container area. Yeah.
It's like Stacked we have.
It's like Stacked in Toronto, yeah. So it's like food trucks, but they're in shipping containers.
Whoa.
And I had a smoothie for breakfast that was... PB&J.
Oh, I've heard of these.
So it was strawberries, blueberries, agave, almond milk, and peanut butter. And legit, it tasted like a peanut butter sandwich flavor. I would have gone back for a second, except they didn't open until noon because it was Easter Sunday and I had a flight to catch. But if I go back to Tampa again, I'm hitting that. It was fantastic. All right, next.
That is really good.
It was really good. I'm probably going to try it myself. I'm bringing back an old favorite game.
Oh, yeah.
This is IKEA or Metal Band.
Oh, yeah. I love this.
All right.
Okay.
So, here we go. First one, Ogentrost. IKEA or Metal Band?
Ogentrost.
Yes.
I'm going to go Metal Band because it's the Ogen at the front makes it seem a little aggressive for an IKEA.
A little ogre-ish?
Yeah, a little ogre-ish. You know, the first thing I pictured was Shrek. So,
right.
Yeah, I will say Metal Band.
Ogentrost is IKEA. It is a stand for a jar.
Apparently. What? A stand for a jar? Why does a jar need a stand?
I think maybe if it's like one of those
It's a big jar maybe?
Yeah, like a huge jar.
Okay.
Yes. All right.
Next I'm one. Not going to do well in this game, I can already tell.
Avsteg. IKEA or Metal Band?
Abstank?
Avsteg.
That's got to be a Metal Band.
That's got to be IKEA, I'm afraid. Yes, it is some sort of like little organizer kind of thing. Avsteg does sound like a Swedish
That
EV
sounds like
band.
Exactly. Yeah. Or at least like a Swedish like sort of like deep house like
right,
thing,
right.
You know?
Yeah. No, unfortunately, that
is
IKEA.
This is like Flashing Lights by Avsteg, like
exactly.
The beats drop in. Yeah, yep. You know. But
nope. Not
all
this
right.
Time.
Okay.
Next one. Nasum. NASUM. IKEA.
Well, now I'm scared. Like, because now.
Which is the beauty of this game. Shout out to Matt Larkin, who used to have panic attacks when I did too.
NASUM.
Yes.
Okay. At the expense, at I'm going to say Metal Band.
You are correct.
Okay.
Nasum, a tremendously popular Swedish grindcore band.
Because that is way too simple to be an IKEA name. Like it's.
You'd
usually,
think so, but I'm pretty sure there's like, something called like Brad at IKEA.
It's
like
true.
They kind of ran out of stuff, and they were like, yeah, sure, this, you know, this will hold
Shop
your
Brad.
Pictures. Yeah.
Yeah.
Next one, UNRWA, IKEA or Metal Band.
Okay, how is it spelled?
UNRUH.
Are there any umlauts in there?
No umlauts. Which doesn't really help you, because there are just as many umlauts in IKEA as there are.
But I feel like they're, like, U-R-N-U-H?
UNRUH.
I'm going to go IKEA on that one.
It is a metal band. Yes, UNRWA, a fantastic Arizona hardcore band. And I do seem to recall watching an episode of The X-Files where they use the word UNRWA. It's like German for, like, you know.
So we're not even operating in Swedish? Oh, man.
No. Final one. You need this.
I need this for my soul, like for the rest of my day, really.
Merkur, IKEA or metal band.
Spell that for me.
Myrkur. I like how this became a spelling bee.
Yeah. Can I get the country order?
Can you use it in a sentence?
No. Oh, yeah, my sentence is, I think Merkur is... I think Merkur is an IKEA.
I love this so much. It is a Danish black metal band.
I hate this game, right?
Yes. Fantastic. This was everything I hoped it would be. Yeah, very good. Danish black metal band. Okay, final question, and we'll keep this relatively spoiler-free.
Okay.
We have talked about Succession before.
We have, yes.
This is a projection.
Okay.
This is a prediction. When the season ends, we have quite a bit to go. Who wins Succession?
Not Kendall. I'll say that.
Fair.
My prediction for Kendall is that he jumps off a building.
Literally?
Literally. He is...
There was some foreshadowing.
They have placed him on the edge of a...
Like, many buildings.
Every season, he's gone to the roof of a tall building and on his own and just stood there and looked out across the city. I'm like, yeah, that's foreshadowing every time.
Gotcha.
I think Connor. I think it'll be the one who we least expect to win.
Right.
Not our producer, Connor, who shook his head with excitement when I said that. No, I think because... we're starting to see him get some more agency. We're starting to see him, sort of at the end of the third season, he's like, no, I'm the eldest son. He was reminding everyone that. And we're going to keep it spoiler free for this season, but we're starting to see Connor get some more agency and sort of become more resigned to the fact that resigned to his place in the family, resigned to the fact that he was always looked at as sort of an afterthought, and he's just the half brother, and he's everyone's looking at him as a joke, and I think that he will somehow just like how, and if you haven't seen season 3 by now, just don't listen to this, but kind of how Tom sort of weaseled his way to the top at the end of the third, I think it'll be Connor.
Gotcha. I feel like Connor or cousin Greg are those kind of out of left field, it's the one you didn't expect ones.
I don't think it'll be cousin Greg I think he will get in his own way too much.
Right, and I think it might anger people. I'm gonna go a totally different direction.
Oh, wait, I think I know what you're gonna say, but go on.
I'm gonna say Stewie.
Oh, I was gonna say someone else. Okay.
Yes, I think that will be the ultimate, because it's
that would be really disappointing.
Kind of, but at the same time, it would be kind of hilarious if none of the blood children actually ended up top. So that's my prediction. I think Stewie wins in the end.
I would say my second one on that, and I won't elaborate on just because we don't have time. But Jerry.
That's interesting.
I think Jerry has been through so much.
Right.
I think she will, but she's stuck around. She's like a cockroach, man. You cannot kill her.
Yeah, yeah.
I think Jerry
That's
will.
That's a tough path.
Yes.
That's a tough path.
But I think she will stick around.
She's the Nashville Predators of
She is.
It won't be
Carl, who is my favorite character, unfortunately. But I do love Carl. On that note, another lovely season of Succession is taking shape in front of us, and the playoffs are coming up right away. I believe our next podcast, we will be talking about the first couple games of the playoffs.
I would say so.
This is our last regular season podcast, so nothing else we've talked about has mattered. Next week will. It'll be great. So on that note, if you'd like to listen to any of the past episodes of this show or any other lovely THN show, go to thehockeynews.com/podcast or find them on every lovely podcatcher. They all have their own feed. It'll be lovely. Ryan? Thanks for doing this, and we will see you next week.